Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Pete Stoughton.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peake.
Our next guest, Dr. Brian Stafford, has a diverse and eclectic resume. Brian is a psychiatrist by trade and wilderness guide, ecotherapist, poet, and agent of human and cultural transformation by passion. He joins us to share his passions and promote a free webinar this Thursday. Welcome, Dr. Brian.
Morning.
Great to have you on the show. I first want to hear about this resume and your experience. And where have you come from? And tell us a little bit about your experiences.
Sure. I'll try and weave this in so it leads into the discussion of the talk tomorrow. I grew up in Denver, a lover of nature, and spent most of my weekends in the mountains near the headwaters of the Colorado River. And like every good kid, tried to be a good student and go to college and get a good job. And I ended up being drawn toward medicine and psychiatry in particular, and child psychiatry even more particular in that, because I was really interested in how people develop, actually. And I was very curious, since I grew up in a very privileged background, how others might further their development, even though they might have a lot of risk factors or lack of resources. So I trained at, I went to med school in New Orleans to kind of see how that culture was. And then I also trained in pediatrics, adult and child psychiatry in Kentucky to see what it was like to live in Appalachia. And then I worked for a while in Ghana and Cape Town, South Africa, before coming back to the States and working in academic psychiatry, both at Tulane and the University of Colorado, where I supported families that had young children with health conditions and mothers who had what's called mental illness, postpartum depression, and helping build systems of care for young children so that they can develop on a pretty good trajectory. So that was the first part of my life, and it was a very enjoyable part of a career. I did pretty well and moved up the academic ladder and published and taught and really loved it. And then a voice said, "You're done." And I was like, "What does that mean?" I had kind of reached the pinnacle of what you can in academics. But there was a longing for something a bit wilder. It had more to do with nature. I was a little bit distraught about my own time stuck in the hospital or the clinic, how I really longed to be in nature. And I was also becoming more worried about what was happening in our culture, both ecologically, but also, as you see now, I think the veil has lifted that we live in a pretty profoundly sick culture. And I wasn't really sure that psychiatry was offering much to that. So I left medicine and went on a bit of a wander, actually, to discover how might psychiatry maybe pivot, or maybe I had to leave it all together. What did nature have to do with becoming a mature human, and how might it inform what we do in helping people develop into who they're meant to be? So that's kind of a brief synopsis of where I've started and where I'm heading, something like that.
And we're still on our own pilgrimage, all of us. And so you've invited us to join you. And I love in one of the bios, it says, you left academia and Western culture to move to the ... wild Pacific West Coast of Costa Rica. What happened in Costa Rica? What happened in your journeys that really transformed this perspective in your professional paradigm now?
Sure. I think a couple of things. One is, again, I was paying close attention to my inner longings and thinking about what I had given up for medicine, which was spending a lot of time in nature. And I loved poetry when I was younger. And I chose not to pursue that path because, you know, it wouldn't make any money. But then I read a book by Bill Plotkin called Soulcraft, Crossing into the Mysteries of Nature and Psyche. And by page 10, I knew that I was probably done with being a psychiatrist. There was something about the way that he wrote about the wilderness journeys that he guided, and mostly in the Four Corners area, that was really alluring to me about what happened when people would have conversations with nature and what would happen in their dream world and when they performed ceremonies or when they went out on some sort of soul quest, fasting and asking for a deeper understanding of who they are. So that book really kind of led me further after I heard the voice said, "You're done." I had a sense that I was on the track of something really important. So I actually did a couple of programs with their organization called Animas Valley Institute, and they were wildly transformative. I can't say enough about them. I actually left medicine to go train with them and work with them. And after I had done a couple of programs with them, and then I told the founder, Bill Plotkin, that I think I'm supposed to train with you and leave psychiatry, he said, "I think you're right." So we decided actually to move to Costa Rica for a different pace of life. That was part of it because, you know, my wife and I are both physicians, and it was a pretty busy pace, and we had young twin boys. So we moved to Costa Rica just to slow down. And I think many people are seeing, you know, obviously it's a very challenging time right now with the pandemic, but there's something that happens when we slow down and we live according to nature's rhythms rather than technology's rhythms. I was able to kind of move deeper into my body and into my emotions and my imagination and discover a sense of what I was really here to do and to really begin taking the first steps out as myself as some sort of ecotherapist and maybe depth psychiatrist, depth psychologist, something like that.
Where were you on the wild Pacific coast of Costa Rica?
Yeah, it's an interesting little town called Nosara.
Oh, yes.
It's in the Guanacaste province, and it's probably half American Canadians who are a bit tired of American Canadian culture, especially Canadian weather. And then it's half locals, and my kids actually got to go to a bilingual Montessori school. So it was a wonderful experience for the whole family.
Absolutely. Well, going back to, you know, your study under Dr. Bill Plotkin, this thing that he calls patho-adolescent culture. And I'm so curious about that because there is sort of an interplay between what you're doing now. And I just keep thinking of wilderness therapy that a lot of young people go through.
Sure.
But you're sort of doing that for adults. So how does that tie into patho-adolescent culture?
Yeah, great. Maybe I can define a couple of types of cultures here. And one of them is a very patho-centric culture, which is patho-adolescent, but also very pathological. And it's a culture that's primarily focused, or not focused, it's filled with violence, greed, and self-centeredness, and shame, and addiction. And that's very prevalent in America and certainly in other parts of Western culture. And when I say patho-adolescent, I'm also implying that there's a healthy adolescent. Another version of patho-adolescent is one that really focuses on primarily on humans, on self, security, safety, socioeconomic status. In Bill's description, in my understanding, that's still an adolescent and a pathological version of an adolescent. A healthy adolescent moves a little bit beyond that, where it's not just about myself or about my family or my profession or my religion. It's moving a lot broader. And one of the ways it's moving broader is it's actually earth-centered. It's ecocentric. So unless a culture is ecocentric, it tends to be pretty pathological and obviously use up its land resources, which we find obviously on a planetary scale right now. So other signs of a healthy adolescent society are also that it's very collaborative. It's about sustainable or regenerative development, has basic rights for all beings, egalitarian relationships, and really about environmental, social, and also economic health. So it's not just focused on business as usual, as you would think about a lot of Western culture, which is really about this techno-industrial growth society that has led us to the kind of predicament that we're in. That's kind of what I mean about patho-adolescent society and how I understand Bill means, and also what I mean about a healthy adolescent society. It's one that's really where we're striving for as a culture right now. And I think the whole pandemic and the Black Lives Matter movement and all the other social unrest, we see that what capitalism in at least America has brought to us, and it's time for a different way of being. And it's not just a different economic system. It's probably a different educational system. It's a different religious system. It's a different way of helping people mature into becoming healthy individuals.
Wow.
And that also means it's mental health system.
Yeah, absolutely. So you will be, I was going to say coming to Park City, but of course it's a webinar, but you are partnering with Communities That Care and also Dr. Babbie Lester, Natural Sage, I mean, excuse me, Mountain Sage Natural Health. And yep. The name of your webinar is Rewilding and Insoling Mental Health and Wellness. It's tomorrow, June 11th, from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. You can register through Communities That Care website, which is ctcsummitcounty.org. Now, I know that this webinar is focused on mental health professionals, but in some sort of way, we're all mental health professionals, aren't we? And so,
we're all counselors to each other and good ears and good listeners, yeah.
Right, right. So really, can anyone...
Ahead. Yeah, this is really for everyone. It's really focusing on the mental health system or those that are kind of work in it or participate in it. There'll be a couple more talks by myself and another guide at Animus. One is about rewilding childhood, which is primarily for parents and educators. And then I'm also going to do one primarily just for educators, whether they be professional educators or home professional educators. So this is a series of talks that we're going to have this summer.
Oh, wonderful.
And you used the term animus. What, again, for layman's, what is an animus?
Yeah, well, Animus Valley Institute is the name of the organization Bill Plotkin founded. It's also a Latin term that means soul, actually. And each one of us, maybe this is related to the question of how do we ensoul mental health. Almost all of mental health is focused on fixing a dysfunctional ego. And what I mean by ego, it's the everyday kind of consciousness that by which we work and love and struggle. And almost all of our treatments focus on helping that function. But I'd like to remind us of a great quote by the spiritual philosopher Krishnamurti. He wrote, "It is no measure of health to be well-adjusted, or I'll say asymptomatic, to a profoundly sick society." So one of the challenges of the mental health system is helping people function in a dysfunctional culture. And maybe that's not the right way. What I'm going to talk about tomorrow night is what if there's a different way that's not focused on symptoms or complexes or diagnoses, but on cultivating wholeness and cultivating a relationship with the natural world and eventually going on what we would call the journey of soul initiation, which is discovering your unique reason for living.
And what would
that's one of long definition of animus.
Okay.
Things woven in
soul. And what would you say to the person who says, okay, I just want to be the part of the dysfunctional society?
Well, I would...
That's kind of like the Justin Trudeau pause when he was asked about our president. Go ahead.
I guess part of it would be which part of themselves is speaking. You know, I think sometimes part of it is a developmental shift where we get to a place where it's just time for something different. And like that voice came for me, a very authentic voice said, you're done in a certain way of being. Sometimes we have to really listen closely to that. And in a healthy culture, my understanding is that there's people who are experts at listening for when people are ready for a bit of a shift, right? Many people go visit counselors or psychologists or psychotherapists or psychologists when their life is undergoing a profound shift, whether it means it's having the birth of a child or a divorce or a loss of a job. It's a change in adaptation. And typically we're trying to get to a different way of functioning. And my understanding is that all of us want to evolve. If you don't want to evolve, there's some curious concerns about why that might be. You might have particular voices that might say, there's nothing else beyond this. Who are you to think that you can ask for anymore? Or you might have voices that say, you know, you've got plenty here. You've got a lot more than other people. Don't evolve. So there's these different voices that we have in our psyche. We call them loyal soldiers or inner critics. And they tend to keep us small, actually, and they tend to keep us safe. And one of the tasks of a healthy adolescent is actually working with those voices so that we can become bolder. Humble, but bold in the way that we move in the world.
We're speaking with Brian Stafford. He'll be conducting a webinar tomorrow, June 11th, from 6:30 to 8. You can register for that through Communities That Care here in Park City at ctcsummitcounty.org. And Brian, I'm wondering, I mean, you left medicine, and so... have you kept your medical license? Do you practice psychiatry in the sort of way that, you know, you exhaust all these other types of nature-based, you know, the journey of the soul and the kind of what you've gotten involved with in recent years, with the Animas Valley Institute and others? You know, do you ever get to the point where you say, well, we need to prescribe you X, Y, Z?
Yeah, great question. I don't practice psychiatry anymore. I only do this type of work. Part of my own journey to discover who I was is that I trained in medicine to understand medicine, but also to help transform it in a certain way. But I've also been asked by a part of my, we'll just call it myself, the muse, to do other things. So besides working as a guide for Animas and as a trainer there, I also helped found a seminary called Seminary of the Wild. And this is for individuals who come from a Christian faith who also are longing for something wilder and more experiential in nature. And I also started another organization called Wilderness is Medicine, which is really for healthcare providers kind of discover the same kind of pathway of rewilding and souling themselves so that they can serve better. And I'm also involved with a group of people. I live now here in Ojai, California. We're starting a nature-based soul-oriented teachers college, which is really focused on not helping children fit in, but discover what uniquely they're here to do, all within the context of nature. So that's, I don't practice psychiatry anymore, but I do continue to read on the literature, and I do give these talks to mental health groups and to psychiatrists, and I'm working on a book about this right now. And there certainly is a place for medicine or psychotropics in psychiatry, definitely for individuals who might have diagnosis of what we might call bipolar disorder or schizophrenia. That's certainly part of it. But I think by and large, there's an over-prescribing of many anti-anxiety medicines and antidepressants because I can just say from some of the ecotherapy training that I've received with Animas and some other somatic therapies that we use on our programs, one of the main reasons for depression and anxiety is failure to cultivate the wholeness of the self. There's actually parts of ourself that can nurture us and talk us into our feelings and to fully feel the fear that we have or the sadness or the grief. And in some ways, psychotherapy or medications are ways that we can cut out symptomatology without helping our own capacities mature. So that might be how I'd answer that question. There's certainly a place for it when individuals who have recalcitrant illness or obviously very significant biological predisposition or biological disorders. But I think there's also another way, and I think we're finding that out from many studies, that medications only work for so long for many individuals. And the combination probably of medications and psychotherapy and also some different kind of processes of cultivating their own wholeness, their ability to be present, like mindfulness, their ability to wander and have conversations in nature, and opening up themselves to their own imagination is another unique component of this. That's kind of the depth psychology component of this, moving into the depths of our psyche. And also not just working for ourselves, but thinking about how do I be of service to the world? These are all different ways that actually alleviates symptoms without actually calling it a disorder. And it also helps us mature as individuals.
Very interesting, everything that you bring forth here. I wanted to ask you, and I have to say I've learned a lot of different words during this interview, but you mentioned psychotropics. And I've always wondered, because, and this will be a lead into my question, the difference between psychedelics and psychotropics. And then I wanted to ask you about, you know, the most widely read author that has written a book on that, of course, Michael Pollan, and How to Change Your Mind.
Yeah.
Just, can you talk a little bit about that? Yeah.
Sure. Have you read the book, by the way?
I have read parts of it. I've skimmed it, as we do in our business of journalism here.
It's a fabulous book because it's a combination of history of development of psychotropics, about psychedelics, the research on psychedelics, and also his personal experience with them. And I'd recommend it to everyone. But first, let's define some terms. Psychotropic is just another name for a medication that is used to help alleviate symptoms of the ego would be the way to describe it. So it's antidepressants, antipsychotics, anti-anxiety medicines, those kind of things. Psychedelics, there's a couple of different ways to describe them. A psychedelic is basically one that radically shifts consciousness. So when these first were coming online in the 50s and 60s, they really were known as psychedelics and also entheogens, opening up the God within, actually. And there was a lot of early research that showed them incredibly beneficial for many psychiatric conditions. But eventually, partly due to some of the promotion of psychedelics by certain individuals in the culture and also the fact that it was happening at the time of great cultural unrest in the late 60s and 70s, the psychedelics got named psychotomimetics, actually saying that they create psychosis, which is possible, but it's actually pretty rare, especially in done in really controlled conditions with a skilled therapist and also with individuals prepared for the journey. And if you read Michael Pollan's book, what really happens here is there's something about when someone takes a particular psychedelic that it shifts their consciousness, that parts of their psyche are suppressed and other parts of who they are come to the fore, and the way they perceive the world is much greater and different. And there's a great movement now, primarily led through this group called MAPS, which is out of Santa Cruz, that are really studying the benefits of, again, restudying, perhaps is the better word, the benefits of psychedelics and how they might be used for depression, in cancer treatment, definitely in post-traumatic stress disorder. And they're finding a lot of benefit from that. So I think that is going to be one of the waves of the future, are using plant-based and other medicines that really shift consciousness rather than focus on symptom control. And I'll just also offer here some of the work that I do, which is about going into nature and fasting and some of these other things. That's also about shifting consciousness. And maybe that's really where I think psychiatry and psychology are heading, is they're heading toward a rewilding, moving more toward outer nature and in conversation with the natural world, and also discovering other parts of our inner nature that have kind of lay hidden. And then also moving to these other parts, because what our culture really needs is a massive consciousness shift, that it's really not about the gross national product. It's not about the economy. It's about the wellness and livelihood of all the beings and the earth community. So I'm hoping that's where I'm committing myself. And I see a lot of other younger people moving toward this and other health professionals as well. And I also think that families are wanting this. We obviously, you might have seen this, you guys live in a great place for nature. Most people who've been pent up during the pandemic, where do they want to go? They want to go into nature, actually. They don't want to go shopping. They want to go into nature.
And have you seen for yourself and your community more interest because of that COVID crisis, the reconnecting with nature and the disillusionment with technology and being, isolated?
I have. Yeah, I've tracked that here. I feel it in myself, but I've also tracked it in others. And the great longing for people in where I live, they had to actually shut down the trails. There were so many people coming from different parts of Ventura and Los Angeles that the parking lot was just overwhelmed and they couldn't social distance on the trail. So my sense is there's a great longing for a different way. And we're at a great pause now, and the opportunity might be to discover a more natural way to kind of move forward at a different pace. It's more equitable for all as well. What are you guys seeing in where you live? Has there been a...
Trails are just... they are packed with people. And we have 450 miles of single-track trail in and around Park City and Summit County. So, and people are out in the... Yeah, it's huge. We want to be out. We've been stuck inside and... Yeah, it's a wonderful way to experience.
We feel most like ourselves when we're outside.
Yeah, for sure. And it, for those who, go a little bit beyond, it's kind of refreshing to normally you see people, just within a half mile of the trailhead or just at the trailhead, but now you're seeing people extend a little bit further. And so, it does require a little bit more to find that isolation in nature, but it's certainly worth it. So, again, thank you so much for joining us. Doctor, and we will encourage those to join communities that care for rewilding and ensouling mental health and wellness this Thursday, 6:30 to 8, webinar online. You can go to Communities That Care on Facebook and find that link and learn more about connecting with nature and your psyche.
Brian Stafford, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, thanks for having me, and thanks for your great questions.
And again, ctcsummitcounty.org or the Facebook page. It is free, but you have to register. So 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. tomorrow night, June 11th.